And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Now, what you're going to hear over the next hour or so are stories that could bother you. They could frighten you. And so I'm warning you right now that if you need to turn away from the radio, and I normally don't like you to turn away from the radio, but this is the time to do it. My special guest, Russ Dizdar, is going to be joining us. He was with me a few years ago. We're going to be talking about satanic rituals, crimes, occult crimes, and the New World Order, and how these are all connected. So Russ will be with us next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. Russ Dizdar is a licensed and ordained minister. He was a police chaplain and was permitted to teach on the occult and satanic crimes. He works with victims of satanic ritual abuse and has investigated these satanic rituals, these occult crimes, and mind control. He founded the agency called Shatter the Darkness back in 1982 to engage extraordinary underground growth of satanic ritual abuse and its connection to the Nazis, government programs, programmed assassins. He has spent thousands of hours working with many victims and investigations of the connection and the ritual crimes. And here he is back on Coast to Coast. Russ, always a pleasure to have you back, my friend.
Mr. George Norrie, thank you so much. Great to be with you again. On behalf of all victims everywhere, thank you for your kindness. Appreciate it.
These victims, when they first come to someone for help, are they looked at as being crazy, whacked out, strange? How are they looked at?
Yes, I mean, that's it, absolutely. Number one thing, they feel they're crazy. They're hearing voices inside their head. They're missing time. They got flashes of, just bloody things and rituals and being in laboratories. So when they're first coming out and first beginning to realize something's wrong, they feel they're going crazy. That's why, you know, tens of thousands have ended up in psych wards over the last three decades. And that's how I think culturally it's looked at. But the truth is, they're not crazy. They've just been horribly, horribly abused in every kind of way along the way.
The people who are doing the abuse, Russ, what's wrong with them? My gosh.
Well, I think that's, I mean, I listen to you a lot, and I listen to you hear, you know, talk about new order in an ominous sense in the world. There's real radical evil, George. There's radical evil, and we've faced it, you know, through the demonic side. We faced it through seeing humans. We've seen it in history with the Nazis and many others, you know, and we're seeing a lot of crazy and bizarre things in the news nowadays. But radical evil is real. It really exists. It, you know, when people embrace it, they go dark, and they can have an agenda. They can learn from the dark side, and that's what part of all this is about. They've learned from the dark side, and they've embraced, you know, with even feeling that they're doing a right thing, or that they got a great, you know, cause, as did Hitler and Himmler, and what we're seeing with ISIS in the world. There's an embrace of evil. And what it leads to always is destruction of humanity, always.
Russ, let's talk a little bit about your background, how you got into all of this. Did something happen? Tell us the direction you took.
Sure. When we got involved, and I think we shared this before a little bit, but we got involved just in the 70s. We were dealing with young people that were, you know, we were told that they had voices in their head and dark things, and some of them were getting in trouble because of what they were doing. And so we engaged, you know, that side, that demonic side in young folks. And it was in 1980 that, and we were wanting to learn more how to deal with it, because we were finding young people dealing with Satanism, dabbling, experimenting, reading books in the late 70s. And so I was starting to read anything and everything I could. We met a law enforcement agent that brought us into police academies kind of under the rug to learn about occult crimes. And then the day I came home from one of the police academies, I got a phone call, and it kind of kicked off everything in 1980. little 13-year-old girl in the psych ward, hearing voices, having flashes, as I mentioned, and she wanted to do some kind of ritual of the flames what I was reading from her drawings and writings, that she had to prove her love for her mother, who was a satanic priestess. So she was going to pour gas all over herself, light herself in the ritual of the flames, and dedicate this to her mother in proof. So it was so bizarre, so twisted. I worked with the little girl, and from that point, we began to get other cases. And we had to learn. We had to learn quick. We learned a lot of times the hard way, and since that time, hundreds of victims, thousands of hours dealing with the victims, the sub-personalities created. We didn't know anything in the 80s about sub-personalities and programming and even the military's connection and how far back it goes. We were just wanting to help victims. But it's huge, George. It's huge. It's worldwide.
Are we dealing with primarily these programmed personalities by organizations and groups, or are we dealing with individual cases of sick individuals, demonic-possessed people, who are doing what they do?
It's really kind of both. I mean, it really is along the way both, because, I mean, we deal with individuals demonically possessed. I mean, a lot of possessions, a lot of exorcisms over the years. So you don't have to be in this huge agenda, but you could be possessed without it, but in the agenda, in satanic ritual abuse, there's always demonic presence, and that's got to be dealt with. Because we had to learn that it was done by design. We had to learn that there was an actual kind of like template to all this. And the more we begin to deal with the victims, and the more that came forward, and the more over the years and military monarchs and others begin to come, well, it just turned into, you know, helping individuals to seeing a pattern, to seeing, George, in every single city in the United States, they're here by the thousands. And so we had to ask, where are they coming from? Who did this? Where did they learn the technology to split them? Where, you know, what is this programming and why? Why do they have shooter assassin personalities? Is that a part of modern day shootings? And, you know, we go to Europe and we find them all through Germany, and they're in England, they're in France, they're in Canada. So from the individual, then we go to now, you know, when we're dealing with them in the 80s, now years have gone by. We have a second generation, a third generation, and now we're dealing with 8, 9, and 10, and 12-year-olds. Same thing. The numbers are astounding also.
How many books do you have out on the subject these days, Russ?
We have one primary book. The book is called The Black Awakening, subtitled The Rise of the Satanic Super Soldier. Now, the title of it, I explained in the beginning, because it was given to me sitting on the side of a lake in a kind of a secretive meeting with a military, highly trained individual, numerous personalities. They consider themselves a psi warrior, deep connections to military, to CIA, one of the most powerful trained assassin warriors. They brought the subject up to me. A matter of fact, they reached over, George, to my shirt and ripped it open to see if I had a recording device to make sure I wasn't going to record them.
Uh-huh.
And this is back in early 19, I think around 1991, and they explained to me that they said, Rush, you have no idea how deep, how broad this is. You have no idea what we're plotting. And so I'm just saying what they said. They spoke out of their mouth as a highly trained military side, deeply coven side, spoke numerous languages, including the satanic twilight languages they talk about. And they said, Russ, we're going to bring down the nations, and we're going to bring in a new order, and we're going to bring in a new world leader. You have no idea, you know, how close we are to this. And I listened to them. I heard this along the way, but this is the one that explained it. And they said, we call it the Black Awakening, a chaos that will collapse it all, and a new order. So that connection was made. And since that time, we've heard that over and over and over and over again.
The stories of possessed people, demonically possessed people, it has fascinated me since, gosh, the movie The Exorcist, I guess. Maybe even a little before that, Russ. How serious is that subject?
Well, that side is serious in this sense. In the 70s, we were dealing with it. And I can say this, being on the field full-time for 35 years, dealing with thousands of individuals over the years, The rise of real full possession is really off the charts. We can't even respond to all the requests now. We can't even get to all of them. We've dealt with it in psych wards, in jails, on the streets. Officers have brought us people. Psychiatrists bring us people. Pastors bring us people. People contact us. And, you know, the first time it occurs, I mean, we see it in Hollywood. We see that, you know, The Exorcist and now tons of shows and programs and so forth. But the reality, the weirdness, George, is this. When a demonic, a spirit, an entity takes over a human being, and all of a sudden, you realize they're looking through that person's eyes. They're speaking through that person's mouth. There is a viciousness, a hatred, you can feel it. You can feel what they would, I mean, and then to listen to them screech and scream against God. You know, we just learned, you know, over doing hundreds of these deliverances and dealing with these demons in people. And there's always a way they get in. There's always a way in which they get in. But we've just seen it over and over. Teams we've brought in, and we've made officers and teachers and psychiatrists. They'll bring us somebody, and I'll say, you come into the room with us, and you watch this yourself, and you see this, because I don't want to try to explain it to you later. And we have seen some of the most bizarre occurrences, and that side. And the truth is, George, I am so utterly sick of the demonic side. They don't care if it's a baby. They don't care who it is. They don't care. That side is radical evil, and there's more possessions than I've ever seen in over three decades.
What's happening? Because you're right, there are more. What's going on?
Well, I think it's, I mean, you know, we talk about the end of days. I think one thing is, biblical prophecy, which I call just God's intel, a massive portion of that has not been really poured out. We've talked about the second coming, we've talked about the Antichrist, we've talked about a lot of things, but there's a huge description of a kind of frog in the kettle, evolutionary development, more spirits, more demons coming in. Until you begin to see that there is, it's as if it's like God ripping Hell's Kitchen's lid right off and saying, "Hey, here's what this dark side's plotting by design. It's militaristic. It's global in its ultimate goal, and they're coming and here's the overall prophecies." And I could say on the field, it clearly seems this way. They're coming in unprecedented numbers, not just to possess people and make it look bad and people and make people, you know, screech and do all that they do, but there is an agenda. There is a George. I've listened to you late night many times, and I've said, man, he feels it.
Oh yeah.
He knows it. There is an ominous thing. So what you feel that's coming, and the sense of catastrophic collapse, and the sense of, you know, something on the horizon, well, just beyond the veil, that presence and power. I always tell people this: there is no new world order without the supernatural dark side presence. They're behind this ultimately, and they've collected quite a few, and we're at the brink. I think I really believe we are at the brink of seeing what the scripture has spoken about. We're really close to seeing the most catastrophic time in human history.
This moment that is occurring now that we feel, can it be changed? Can it be altered?
Well, that would be the hope of everybody. Anybody and everybody would love to see. And I'm going to say yes, but by whose hand? Here's the hope, and this is the indestructible hope that I have. You know my background. I'm a Christian. I believe in Jesus. He's the one that got me out of the dark side. I wasn't raised in church. I wasn't a religious person, but I know his power and I know his presence. And here's what I know: that absolutely there will be an intervention, but it's going to be by the hand of God. Man by himself cannot stand against this dark side supernaturalism. And how huge it is. It's kind of like the possessed person. They can't get free themselves. They can't break loose once they've gone that far. And that's kind of what we see happening in the world as a whole. And you and I, you know, I know you've seen it, more of it and more of it and more of it and more of it. So I believe, like what we do, we just came out of Upper New York dealing with another case. We go all over the place. So we're here to engage it, to help people. We know there's hope. We know there's a way to break this. We've turned state's evidence on the occult crime stuff. We believe that things can be done. But I want to say this, George, there's an ultimate, we all want the evil to stop.
Yeah.
But in history, as we know it, fallen human history, by man's hand, by political, you know, action, and look at the political action right now, it can't stop it. The ultimate hope is that God's going to intervene. There is going to be a stopping to all of it. But we can do things now. And we see people's lives totally changed, you know, brought to God, healed, delivered. When I love to be able to do this, and people have asked us, Russ, can you film this? Well, it's hard to do that in some senses, and we don't want to exploit anybody. But to see somebody that was packed with this demonic side, this presence, screeching and screaming and throwing them to the ground, and then they're set free by Jesus, and they're set free, and their whole countenance, their whole life, they realize they have come out of something, and they know. And to see that happen again and again and again, so there is a lot of things we can do. But in the ultimate sense, as we go down the road, the ultimate sense, George, I have no question that it's God in Christ that's going to bring, you know, an end to all of this and an indestructible immortality he's brought to humanity. I call Jesus the hero of humanity. I think he is, to the, you know, and that's going to be my answer for that. But we're going to see more, George. We're going to see more of the worst.
Well, I think so too. And as you just mentioned, I'm seeing and feeling it more and more. The big question too, Russ, is why? Why is it happening in such a big way now? What did we do? Did we do something wrong?
Well, I mean, this goes back again to the biblical side of things in a sense. I mean, we can look at humanity, and I don't know if I mentioned, no, I don't think I did last time. We were at the transhumanist meeting in New York with Dmitry Itzkoff and Ray Kurzweil and all of the geneticists and all these inventors and all of them that want immortality. And here you've got some of the top world scientists trying to explain the nature of man. What's wrong with us? That's the truth. I mean, I'm sitting here, you know, I'm in my very, very late 50s, and I don't run as fast. I don't go as fast. I have one kidney left. I have pins in my shoulder that hold a shoulder together. What is wrong with humanity? So I believe there was a fall. It's not what it should be. I mean, this is not what God intended. The fall of the human race, George, involves a death code, a sin code that's inside. Something has altered us, and we are changed. And this is important because I've done funerals and funerals and funerals as a pastor over the years and stood beside the caskets and, you know, and we already know the crime aspect and seeing all of that, and even my own family members and so forth. Death is an intrusion. Death is an intrusion in the way God brings the revelation of it. And I could, you know, it's an intrusion. God sees it as an enemy. We're not what we were supposed to be, and we long, and we're lost. One apologist called this soul sorrow, that we dream in our minds the ideal of being, you know, eternal and being happy and all of the evil gone and no disease and no crime, and yet then we open our eyes to the reality and we see there is crime, there is disease, there is pain, there is stuff in us that's wrong. And we then all of a sudden, he calls that, we have all of a sudden soul sorrow. We try to figure it out. We don't know why it's so bad. Well, it's the fall of the human race. And in saying that, again, I have to express, you know, that, I mean, because, you know, I've walked with God 40 years now.
It's a long time.
There's nobody that loves us more. There's nobody that can utterly change us from the inside out. And what I like to call, you know, I know biblically we call it eternal life. I love the terminology indestructible immortality, and then seeing the face of God, the God that loves us. So there, the fall is one issue, but the redemption, the passion of God to get to us, is the other side of the story.
All right, stay with us, Russ. We're going to come back, and I want you to tell us about some of these satanic ritual cases. You don't have to be too graphic about it, but we'll get into those when we come back. Welcome back with Russ Dizdar as we talk about satanic ritual abuse. And, Russ, some of the cases are indeed sad and tragic. If you could relate one or two of them for us, I'd appreciate it.
Sure. There's the public ones that folks have known for a while. Richard Ramirez out of California, the Night Stalker, the Casio case, the Sullivan case, the Sean Sellers case. And then we have the Jeffrey Dahmer. And again, that was close to home. That was 20 minutes away from me was his house. But here's what occurred with Jeffrey Dahmer. We all know the story of what he did. We don't have to go into the details of that. But I was at a DEFTEC SWAT team training area in northern Ohio, and law enforcement agents brought in the books, the actual crime scene pictures of his apartment. Now, they're horrific, and the story behind what he did to the bodies and to the people and so forth. And but here's what they did not see. And here's what nobody has told the public, but it's all in the crime scene photos and all part of the real investigation. He had a satanic altar built out of human thigh bones.
Oh, God.
He had what is called a power cone, like a triangle, forged out of human skulls. So behind Jeffrey Dahmer, he was also multiple. So there's a bigger story behind Jeffrey. Someone did this to him in the beginning. Somebody did something to him.
Right.
And nobody intervened, and it continued. And until he got caught, it just continued. And that's how it is. In a number of the serial rapists, serial murderers that we see, we find multiplicity. We find there's a history. We find and listen, George, in law enforcement, we've been trained, you know, told in the academies, and we've listened to the instructors say, don't tell the public about these crimes. Don't go into the detail about the satanic side. It'll scare the public. I've seen in the academies hundreds of slides. We now own many of those academy slides, hundreds of them, and they're horrific. One local case that we have, and it's still fresh in my heart and mind because it's not over. A little girl, her name was Jackie Cooper, that was in the Akron Beacon Journal, the papers in our local area. You know, I once held this little girl and her twin sister, and yet she was kind of carted away and killed in a ritual in which many of her bones were broken over a period of time. The individual that did this described in the Akron Beacon Journal newspaper as he described himself as a black pagan or a Kralinian. But he did dark rituals, and he used her in those rituals, and he killed her in those rituals, and now he went to jail, and the biological mother ended up going because of complicity. And I ended up dealing with the father for, you know, a long time, and we have just now reentered that case because we think it's a little bit bigger than just what occurred. There's a case in Akron we dealt with the what's called the Hands of Glory. And one thing, George, we're dealing with, we're at October 27th, 28th. From the 13th of October all the way to the 4th of November, the underground satanic rituals will build. They're going to build towards this weekend.
Yeah. Our teams this is their this time, weekend. Isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, everyone knows. I mean, anybody in the New Age, Wiccans and Pagans and Druids and those in Santeria and the Mexican, the Saint of Death, which is growing like crazy among the drug trade, they all know that this, they all gather for different reasons. But the undergrounders, what I call the blood and guts folks that know what human sacrifice is all about, that's what they do. And, we have a 14-year-old little girl and a 17-year-old little girl in rituals. We've turned state's evidence. The feds now have the case. They've not solved the case. They brought the individual in who's one of these individuals that has subpersonalities, cult loyal personalities, ritually trained personalities, and then the demonic side. And again, we won't go into description, but what they did to the little 14-year-old is an outrage, George. It's an outrage what occurred over an hour or two of torture and all the things that were done, only to bring demons. Whether we believe it or not, they believe they're summoning the demons, bringing them the demons, and gaining power and purifying their blood, they say. And that case, you know, bothered me so much
Jeez.
that I spent years praying, and I tracked down the parents, and I met with parents of both victims and talked to them, and we're not done. We're still not done because that case is not over, and it's hard in those cases, George, because in criminalistics, in forensic psychology, there's no real grid for the sub-personality trained, you know, ritual worker that does these horrific things, or the assassin shooter, which is a present, you know, modern day issue with Aurora and with Phoenix and with Jared and so forth. That's another side of this, and it's there, and more of it's to come. But you know, that's a little bit. I can give you more if you want that.
These are fascinating cases. They're tragic but fascinating.
Absolutely. I mean, we can look at Mr. Holmes from Colorado and the shooting, and look at the design behind it. Now, I listened to an FBI profile on television say they just snapped. And here's what bugs me about it, because, you know, we know that it's not just that they snapped. We've dealt with trained, programmed assassin personalities that are extremely able in weapons and so forth. Well, that sub-personality is down inside. George, every single one of the first generation of these victims, they call themselves, or they're called chosen ones, chosen to serve Satan, chosen to bring down the world and help bring in a new order. All of them have the assassin shooter personality, the ones that they're going to create chaos. But I think some of them have slipped out. I think the United States has been tested a little bit, because I look at Holmes. Now, I will not diagnose somebody unless I have them face to face and begin to engage the sub personalities. But,
right. But
from a distance and from a deep look into Holmes, I believe he had programmed subparts. I believe Jared had programmed subparts, and they can look crazy. They ended up going, you know, and when they get to jail, what happened? Where was I? What happened to me? Because the sub personality, which became so expert in their shooting and killing and slaughter and look at it, almost like no conscience. Look how Jared could just shoot a little girl in the face and kill her. When they switch to those program personalities, and it's happened in front of us, we, you know, over and over and over again, it's almost like there's nothing you can do. They're like tranced out, and they're highly supernaturally charged with the demonic side, and they're there to kill. They're there to slaughter.
Yeah.
But they know how. But then when it's done, if they don't commit suicide, because they all have suicide
programs. Are they programmed? I was going to say, are they programmed to kill themselves?
Absolutely. I've never met one that has not had that. They all have suicide programming. And the reason is, you know, they you know, the handlers, the people who've done this, they don't want them to get caught. They don't want them to be inspected. This is huge. I believe Holmes would have eventually. I mean, I think he was going to kill himself in the back. I think Jared was going to try when he wanted to put the clip in again at the end. So the idea of programming is you do your job, you do what you do, and then, you know, you turn the weapon. Another part of them is trained, and again, it's just automatic. You know, they take themselves out. That might have been true of the VTech shooter after a kid that was supposedly never into guns, and there were psychological reports of him off campus, and he has the ability, almost like a SWAT team, he has this incredible ability to kill and as a shooter, but he doesn't stop until he blows his own face off. So in all of them we've met, and all of those in the Monarch and the MK Ultra side of things, there's all of them have the suicide programming, let alone the shooter assassin program and training.
Are police departments set up to deal with these cases, Russ?
Well, yeah, they are. I mean, and here's the weirdness in all this too, George, is, you know, years ago we had an officer come to our training, and they were coming. They said the chief sent them to come to our training that we were doing, and then they recruited me to be the chief, you know, a chaplain in the police department, Unit 78. They wanted, and part of the reason was they wanted me to teach in the police academy on a call crime. Well, as I'm being drawn in and being brought in and going through all the procedures and being given the number and starting to do this and ride with officers, and I've done that anyway for years prior, but The individual that recruited me was a high complex, military, multiple subpersonalities, highly trained, trained deeply in weapons, numerous languages, even ancient ones, old ones that we don't even, you know, humanity doesn't really even use any longer, Belteshari, Oguam, and so forth, to do rituals. This was, I mean, I'm riding in a, here's what occurred. I'm riding with a police officer who, in the police car, switches personalities. And they looked at me and they said, "You want to know everything, don't you?" And I said, you better believe I want to know. You're not supposed to know the secrets. I said, "Well, I want to know them." I said, "Listen, you know who I am. I'm not one of you guys. I want to know what's going on here." Now, I've already spent, you know, many hours, many years with people, and all of a sudden this personality is, George, is describing to me the ritual that is done when the creation of them, the ultimate goal. And again, I'm in a police car, and then when a call comes in, they switch back to the normal person. The normal person doesn't even know they missed 20 minutes. They're back to where they were 20 minutes prior, and they take the call, and we go on a call, and they're created, the main upfront person is created to be amnesic, not to know what the sub-personality does. And we've seen that happen. And yet law enforcement's sick of the shooter stuff. There's a lot of just regular evil stuff and bad stuff, and you can talk about, you know, when it comes to domestic issues and gang issues, and look in Chicago, 50 shootings last weekend or whatever it was. And so there's bad stuff, ideology, evil in the heart. But in program shooters, that appearance is when they just are taking out everybody and nothing stops them until somebody stops them or they try to take themselves out.
How are these program shooters, Russ, discovered and found and trained to do this?
Well, this is where we get into the history of this is what bugged me in the 80s and the 90s. I'm like praying and saying, "God, why are there so many of these? Why are we dealing? Everybody's sending them to us, and we're dealing with more and more and more." And in the 90s, we have Holly Hector works out of Centennial Hospital in a book. They estimated 2.4 million, George, 2.4 million in 1993, 94 victims. You know, I go to a mind control conference in Richmond, Virginia with Corey Dunhammond and Alan Shefton, the constitutional lawyer, and he wrote a book, Trance on Trial. And here you got guys in those professional fields saying in 1993, 94, I forget which date it was, there's a global conspiracy. And please understand, these guys are not prophecy people or Bible people. You've got now the head of the hypnotherapist worldwide. You've got a constitutional lawyer, and they're showing slides. They believed back then, with all of the cases coming into the world of psychiatry, psychology, psych wards, they said that there is a global conspiracy, and they were hinting that it came from, you know, and when they begin to say and show on screen slides and information and testimony, this goes back to the Nazis, they said. There's a famous thing that many have talked about in the field called the Green Bomb Speech, that was discussed there in that mind control conference in Richmond, Virginia. They welcomed the CIA. They wouldn't let any of us record the entire sessions. And they declared this is a global conspiracy. This is a global agenda. We're only seeing the beginnings of it. And since that time, you know, it's two decades now, Pat, more than that passed. And we've seen more of it, and we've tracked it. We've been to Germany. We've been to the Hall of the Dead and Himmler Castle, and we've seen it there. And so we can get into the entire reasons for it. But the reasons, George, is it's a multi-generational. Every single are called satanic ritual abuse, SRA, and the old term MPD, multiple personality disorder, or right. Now DID, the American Psychological Association calls it, the DSM-3, the DSM-4, the DSM-5, they all have it, you know, in those diagnostic manuals now. So they describe the issue, but without who did this. If you meet a multiple, an SRA, no one can be, you can't catch it, you can't become that on your own. It's not that a crazy person. It means someone knew how to cause the trauma to create a split in personality. And then they knew how to then begin to program.
How long does it take to program? Russ, how long does that take?
Sure. That it's the idea of programming can start with just simply speaking to the raw personality, saying, if you think in terms of a hypnotist, and they hypnotize somebody and put them under, you know, say it's a lady, 35 years old, and all of a sudden the hypnotist says, you are now Elvis Presley, and you're going to sing like Elvis Presley, and you're going to get on the stage and dance and sing like, and all of a sudden you see that happen, and it's funny. I mean, it's funny. The person's doing that, and then when the hypnotist says, on the count of three, we're going to take you out of this, and you're not going to, you know, even remember, and he counts to three, they come back, they don't even know what they did for 20 minutes. Well, this is like that, only goes deeper. It's permanent states. They cause the split in human personality. Programming can be they begin to speak and tell them who they are and what they're going to be. It can involve what Cameron out of Canada did, psychic driving, depatterning the personality, and then programming, that is, through screen memories being placed in, telling them they have a new history, using tape recordings to pump in stuff. Programming now is said to be done, it can be done downloaded through laptop, where if they choose the sub-personality they created to be a priestess. Everyone has a job. There's a priestess inside. There's a cutter inside. There's an informer inside. There's a reconnaissance person inside. There's a shooter inside. There's someone inside that will call handlers and tell them if the person begins to tell the secrets. There's one created inside just to inform on them and to tell. So every single one of these have more than just one personality, and each one has a job. And that job is designated, poured into them, and reinforced in them. And like shooters, then they're brought up at times and trained, and then kind of like the idea of a jack-in-the-box, they're put back down, George, by code inside until they're triggered to come back up again.
What are they trying to do? What do they want? Why do they want people to disrupt society?
Sure. Well, and I wrote this in the beginning of the book. I wrote kind of the picture. I sat years and years ago thinking through the whole scenario. And think in terms of, and this is how we'll get the picture. Think in terms of Holmes out in Colorado or Jared in Arizona or the VTech shooter. Think in terms of 25,000 of them being unleashed in the same week. That's the idea. That's
astronomical.
You're not kidding. And that's what I'm saying. Once we begin to see how many are out there, how they all have the same stuff inside, and then we begin to track it, George, we begin to take a team, and we do this. We did this. We were out, like I said, in upper New York this last week in 4 days. I mean, we've been clear to Germany over this issue. To track the origins, and here's what I'm going to tell you. In the United States of America, by design, there are hundreds, not just of the victims that have gone out to psych wards to try to find help, but they're intact. In your city, in my city, in every location, they're there by design, and many of them are just sleepers waiting. And more are being created. And so when we get into the numbers, like I mentioned, the Holly Hector quote from Centennial Hospital, and she's worked 30-some years with victims, 2.4 million. Now, later on, again, a Canadian psychiatrist in a book he puts out connecting this mind control stuff and the purposeful creation of multiple personality disorder, he agreed with this is not me, this is them. He agreed in 2004 with an assessment of 10 million in the United States. If that's true, well, then we begin to track it in Canada, Australia, England, New Zealand, South America, South Africa, throughout Europe, deeply into Germany. And now we've got these chosen ones we're interacting with out of Russia. That's what I had to ask, George. Why are they in all these numerous nations? Why are they in every city? Why are they planted in police departments and in U.S. military? And why are they in places? I'm telling you, I believe it's by design. There is a plot. You understand the New World Order concept. Well, there has to be a real system. No one can take over existing systems without a coup, not only the political and financial side, but they need...
All right, hold on, Russ. We're at the top of the hour already. We'll be back.